It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, we're not afraid here in Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, from the BEA Beautiful Studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com here in Phoenix, Arizona. And the only reason that we're not afraid is just because we, I guess we know what's coming. That doesn't mean that the big giant barreling down on your locomotive isn't going to squash you like a bug on the train track. But hopefully we'll be able to go, you know what? I shouldn't stand here. Let's move over here. And the only way you're going to know that is knowing what the heck is going on. And let me tell you, one of the guys that knows what's going on. You know, that is my next guest. Oh, you're going to like this one. Raymond McGovern. Okay, he's a retired CIA officer, you know, and he's become a political activist. This is, anti-war. I mean, here's a guy that's, calling BS on Cheney. You know, whenever you get a chance saying, yo, liar. McGovern was a federal employee under 7 U.S. presidents over 27 years, presenting the morning intelligence briefings at the White House for a lot of them. So this is somebody that knew what was what. And during the peak of the crescendo, the loudest time of the drum beating for war, Ray McGovern was out there saying, oh, heck no. Well, now they got so many things. We're going to spend a couple hours together. You know, Ray and I know each other. We enjoy each other's perspective on this. But I tell you what I want to start off with. I got you there, Ray?
Got me.
Ray, I want to go ahead and bring Ray up a little bit. One thing I want to do, Ray, is that we're going to talk about the first thing is James R. Clapper being nominated for being Director of National Intelligence. And I'm like, I remember this guy, and the Obama administration coming in and putting someone in such a position of influence that was the liar, liar, pants on fire to send us to Iraq to begin with. Am I close?
You're burning, very close.
This is amazing. Anybody that was support of Obama, certainly as a option for anti-war policy, for him to do this, he did that. He made it extremely laser beam focus clear that what he is a continuation of the Bush administration. That's what this says. Am I wrong?
Well, that's what we, yep, we've seen a lot of those things, haven't we, Ernest?
Yes, we have. Well, tell me about Clapper. What do you know about him?
I know that he was head of the Defense Intelligence Agency in the 90s, and some of my colleagues who worked directly under him, they put it in a nutshell, saying that he was the worst DIA director that they served under. And Pat Lang, one of the more distinguished members of our veteran intelligence professionals for sanity, Pat being a special forces officer in Vietnam and being the first person to teach Arabic at West Point, he'd been around. And he was about number three in DIA when Clapper was there. And he says that the man is a walking load of ambition. What he does is for Clapper and for Clapper's advancement. So those are anecdotal things, but the real damning evidence on Clapper is the fact that he was, from 2001 to 2006, head of an agency that most people haven't even heard about. It's called the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency.
What does that mean?
Well, yeah. What does that mean? That means that his agency is responsible for taking all the imagery, and we're talking not only photography, but we're talking infrared, radar, the whole gamut of imagery that's captured by satellites or by aircraft, they are in receipt of that, and it's up to those analysts to make sense out of what's going on in a given country, mostly in denied areas, like, for example, Iraq. So what does it mean? Well, that means that Clapper was in charge of analyzing imagery on Iraq at a time when Don Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney and the rest of them were yelling and screaming, Iraq has all manner of weapons of mass destruction, and it's re-embarked on its nuclear weapons development program. We are in trouble deep. The first sign we might get would be a mushroom cloud.
So they go to Clapper and say, what's this bump in the road over here? Oh, it's a nuclear silo or whatever, right?
Well, Clapper, no, he's like Burr Fox. He don't say nothing, okay? Why doesn't he say anything? Because he had absolutely, absolutely no evidence of any WMD in Iraq. And so if there were honest analysts in his outfit, and I'm sure there still are, and they went to Clapper and they said, you know, we don't see anything. You know, what CIA says from that Iraqi emigre, those coordinates, that's a chicken farm. And that other thing, that's a factory that makes roller skates. So we don't see any evidence at all of weapons of mass destruction. Well, Clapper just sat on all that and didn't say nothing. And, of course, what happened, of course, was the president was able to make these claims without the head of the agency that would ordinarily provide the best evidence ever of this kind. So when Senator Jay Rockefeller, years later, you know, in 2008, when he concludes the big study that the Senate Intelligence Committee undertook, 5-year study, and he introduces it by saying that the evidence that the administration used was uncorroborated, contradicted, and non-existent. That's a direct quote. And we know what that means. There was non-existent intelligence. Now, what is non-existent intelligence, Ernest? Can you tell me?
It means you make up whatever you want, and there's nothing there to support or deny whatever the heck you say, and you just sit there on your hands and go say whatever you want.
That's exactly right. So, but, you know, Rumsfeld, you remember those wonderful sayings he had, those theorems. And
yeah, north, south, east, and west.
Yeah, but this was even worse. Yeah, what he would say to Clapper, if Clapper, you know, ventured to say, well, Mr. Rumsfeld, by the way, I don't know how to quite say this, but my analysts are giving me a lot of trouble because they don't see anything. Well, Rumsfeld would say, look, the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. In other words, the absence of evidence of any WMD does not mean they're not there, right?
Yeah.
So that's the kind of thing that was being done back in 2001, 2002, 2003. And the final thing I'll say about Clapper is that when they finally caught up with him and they asked him, you know, about 3-4 months into the war, well, where are those weapons of mass destruction? What did he say? Oh, I think that they moved them to Syria.
Let's go bomb them.
Yeah, so he's not only a weenie who will salute and just do what Rumsfeld wanted him to, but he's a fabricator, you know. There ain't nobody on this earth that knows anything about how such weapons might get to Syria that believes that that's the case. But that's what he said, and that's the kind of guy he is, and that's the kind of guy Obama wants to head up or intelligence set up. Give me a break.
Okay, now let me ask this. The kind of guy Obama wants, is it really about what Obama wants? Who's really running the show? I didn't see certainly not a difference in policy. You know, not even a difference in pay. Heck, they kept the same Secretary of Defense. So I'm going, who's really running this show?
Yeah. Well, that's a $64 question. And the evidence is accumulating that it's the Pentagon and the CIA that are running the show, that Obama, and, you know, I never thought I'd hear myself saying this, Ernest, but I think Obama is afraid of the likes of McChrystal and the likes of CIA. Why do
well,
I say that?
Well, I mean, he may have reason to be afraid. I mean, you know, I mean, they, you know, ask JFK and RFK that, you know. I mean, this is, you don't know. I mean, he went in knowing whose ring to kiss. I mean, he was ring kissing, you know, even before the nomination. So What do we have now? You know, in the last couple of days, we have this big announcement, like it's all brand new news. It's been out for, heck, since the Russians were in Afghanistan. All of the staggering cache of unmined mineral resources in Afghanistan. And where does that come from? Yesterday, the Pentagon announced, and I'm going, what the heck is the Pentagon announcing this for? Why is it Pentagon miners now? I mean, what's up with that?
Well, that information, your readers, your listeners should know, is about 2-3 years old, and it's completely irrelevant since it will take decades to develop such resources as is there. The way I read it is simply this. The Pentagon struck out at that little village they were trying to tame. They had to postpone their attack on Kandahar. Karzai has just dismissed the interior minister and the head of intelligence.
Now, you know, they're going to push the button on us, Ray. Let's go ahead and hold that thought. We'll get right back to it when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock and Ray McGovern from the CIA. We'll be right back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. I'm Ernest Hancock and my very, 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 very special guest, Ray McGovern, ex-CIA. You know, can you, Ray, are you ever ex-CIA? Do you get the, is there an ex-CIA badge or are you just kind of in all the time?
Well, I'm afraid I'm out. I guess.
Out of favor, out of CIA.
Well, yeah, when you leave, from my part of the agency at least, a lot of people go back and work on contract, but those mostly the operators and, they hang around.
This is the one that we, you know, went through this clapper thing. I mean, it's the same. I mean, if that isn't a neon flashing light of we got the same people in charge of the Obama administration as the Bush administration, I don't know what is. I mean, of all the things that have happened, this is just neon flashing example. They're setting the boys in place to do exactly the same thing that they did to get us to go into Iraq and Afghanistan. They're going to expand into part of Pakistan, they want to go to Iran, and that's one thing you've been screaming about, man. They want us to go to Iran. That was always the plan. You know, so tell us about a little bit your perspective on that.
Well, Iran has always been their plan. There was a neocon bravado expression that they used as they rolled into Baghdad, real men go to Tehran. So Tehran was always next on the list, and Damascus as well. Now, they were very close to succeeding. Dick Cheney has admitted that he was advocating forcefully for an attack on Iran, but that he couldn't get everybody to agree. And I have to tell you, Ernest, that there's some good news coming out of CIA, and that is this, that there were enough honest, substantive analysts left in CIA after the debacle of Iraq that they did an honest estimate. It was finished in November of 2007, and it said Iran stopped working on the nuclear warhead part of its nuclear program in the fall of 2003 and has not resumed. Wow. That came at a time when President Bush and Vice President Cheney were running around the world saying, Iran is just about to get a bomb. We have to do something about it. The juggernaut for war was rolling real fast, Ernest. And guess what? Admiral Mullen and Admiral Fallon, who was the admiral in charge of CENTCOM, insisted that the main conclusions of that estimate be made public. And once the American populace and the world realized that Bush and Cheney had been lying through their teeth, that Iran not only didn't have a nuclear weapon, but had stopped working on the nuclear weapons-related part of its program in the fall of 2003, namely 4 years earlier than the estimate, November 2007, that knocked the wind out of the whole effort to start a war against Iran.
Oh, they're gonna come up with another excuse, whatever it is. They got them. They bought them from China. They got them from Russia. They got them. They bought half a dozen, so they got them at a discount. Something. Okay.
Well, that's what's gonna see. That's what be. That is what will be interesting with Clapper coming on. Now, during the tenure of his predecessor, Dennis Blair, Dennis Blair was not popular with the, well, let's say, with the Israel lobby, with the Likud lobby, with the Zionists who have such great influence in this country. Why? Well, because he tried to appoint as his chief intelligence analyst, chief intelligence analyst of the whole government, a fellow that was known to advocate an even-handed attitude, an even-handed policy toward Palestinians as well as toward Israelis. His name was Chaz Friedman, and he got sacked the very day he was appointed. He was appointed in the morning, and Chuck Schumer from New York and Lieberman from Connecticut, they got to Rahm Emanuel, and he said to Blair, unappoint that guy right quick. And so Chaz Friedman has the dubious distinction of having been chief of all U.S. intelligence for a period of about eight hours, from early in the morning till he was sacked at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. To his credit, he didn't go, you know, he didn't go easily. He explained exactly how the people who are part of this Likud lobby have enough influence in this government that they could prevent Admiral Blair, the chief of all intelligence, from appointing as his own person Chaz Friedman, who is widely respected in this town, as the head of intelligence analysis. So Chaz Friedman didn't get it, but Admiral Blair resisted until he was canned, resisted changing the estimate because, guess what, there was no evidence to change the estimate. As far as we know, Iran still hasn't resumed work on the nuclear warhead part of its program, and that is significant. So what will Clapper do?
He's going to find something.
It all depends on what Bobby Gates tells him to do.
He's going to find something. In the next segment, we'll get back to Karzai and Village and Minerals and all that. I want to make sure we finish that. I got a note here to get to that. But in the rest of this segment, I want to get controversial here. You ready? Here we go.
Good.
Iran gets nuclear weapons, so freaking what? Okay. So my thing is that, you know why we didn't go into North Korea? Because they go, oh, you want proof? Well, we'll send you Polaroids. Here they are, right here. What are you going to do about it? You know what? I guess we aren't going to North Korea. And what evidence do they have to that they would need nuclear weapons? We go in and we invade every country or have bases all around Iran, and they're supposed to what? Go, oh, please don't beat us. I mean, it's just insane. I think it's to their advantage not to have them, to not be pursuing it, to not just to show, what liars the U.S. is. I think it's to their advantage not to do it. It probably wouldn't be a good idea to play into that. But, morally, I just have to ask the question. Is a sovereign nation allowed to defend themselves just as a human being is with any means available against certainly a proven bully like the United States? So I'm going, they go, you know, they can't be allowed to have the ability to duck. I mean, you're not allowed to resist us. That's just stupid. So I don't know. You got a response to that? Because that's going to make a lot of people mad. Go ahead.
Well, Ernest, we have to go back to that famous speech of George W. Bush, where he talked about the axis of evil. That axis was Iraq, Iran, and North Korea. Mm-hmm. And he claimed that, let's do the reality here. North Korea had maybe one or two, maybe three nuclear weapons, so nothing happened to them. Iraq had no nuclear weapons, and you saw what happened to Iraq. Now, if you were an Iranian and you're watching all this go on, you say, ooh, hey, we're the third point on this axis of evil. North Korea had nuclear weapons, and they didn't get attacked. Iraq didn't, and they didn't get attacked. Well, hello? Still.
And you got China, creating business ties with Iran. So yeah. I'm going, what are they doing with North Korea? The one thing they go, how do you know they didn't have weapons of mass? I was on the radio during all this invasion of Iraq and everything. We're doing shows, and they're going, how do you know they don't have weapons of mass destruction? Because we're going in? That's how I know.
Well, it was very clear. What you do is you look for your best sources. Scott Ritter, previous UN inspector, had sworn that 90% of those weapons of mass destruction had been destroyed. Besides that, Saddam Hussein's son-in-law, Hussein Kamel, defected in 1995 to Jordan, where we interviewed him, and he said 90% of those weapons have all been destroyed. And we said, oh, yeah, well, how do you know? He said, well, I was in charge of the nuclear, of the biological, chemical, and the rocket program, so I know they were destroyed. I said, well, how do you? Well, I went and witnessed the destruction, all right? Well, what's wrong with you guys? Now, that transcript was available before the war. It was golden, but nobody played it in this, what I call the fawning corporate media.
Yeah, the fawning corporate media. We'll get to corporate. Let me make a note. Corporate media. We'll get to that, too, here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and ex-CIA Bray McGovern knows what's what. And we're going to be talking about the future. It's coming. Here we go.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
CIA Ray McGovern. How about some truth, justice, and what used to be the American way? Where the heck that was? I thought it had something to do with some truth and justice. We haven't seen that for a while, have we, Ray?
Well, we're trying, but we don't see much of it in the fawning corporate media, that's for sure.
Well, tell me about that. I mean, what's the role that they play now? I mean, it's a, you know what it reminds me of? I remember, I think it was a Tom Clancy book, and they used the CNN. They were, you know, of course, the foreign guys, bad guys, whatever, getting their news from CNN. So they would have CNN there with old footage of a ship that was in port that really wasn't, you know. So they kind of used them that way, and they made a big deal out of in the book. And I'm going, yeah, you know, I'm sure they're used exactly like that. You know, where do you get your federal FCC license? You know what I mean?
Sure.
So I what role do they play in the making of war?
Cheerleader. I mean, we saw it before Iraq. We're seeing it now with respect to Afghanistan. And we're seeing it with respect to the possibility of an attack on Iran, whether Israel starts it or whether we do it together. One must realize that the corporations that own main corporate media are profiteering from this war. They're making millions of bucks on this, and billions of bucks on this war. They see it as a profit motive, and there's also the interest in getting access to the incredible deposits of natural gas just above Afghanistan. We know about the pipeline that was planned there. I had an opportunity to ask in public former Ambassador Khalilzad, U.S. Ambassador, who was Ambassador to Kabul and to Baghdad. I asked him, whatever happened to that pipeline there? You know, the one that you're going to run from Turkmenistan to Afghanistan, Pakistan, a little slice of India. You know who was going to market that? Enron was going to market that. Well, that's, you know, it's all planned out. Some of the U.S. troops are deployed along that pipeline route. And what does Khalilzad say to me? He says, well, with all the violence, we're not thinking about the pipeline now. And my next question was going to be, well, oh, so that's it. We end the violence, and then we build a pipeline. Is that what it is? There's more natural gas under the sands and under the Caspian next to Turkmenistan that's worth more than all the oil under the sands of Iraq, if you can believe it. And that's what the people out there know to be the case. So it's an amalgam of motivations here, and the fawning corporate press is part of this establishment. You know, when you look at what the fawning corporate press doesn't report, and what they blithely imitate, everything that Israel said about its poor commandos that were, you know, hit with pipes or, you know, trying to prevent them from from sabotaging and commandeering their boats. Everything about that has been picked up in the fawning corporate media. There's been very little about the ones that were killed, which include, by the way, an American citizen. There's been very little about Emily Henchevitz, who lost her left eye to an Israeli smoke grenade deliberately in the same period. There's almost nothing about what Israel does, and there's all kinds of stuff about the terrible things that Palestine is up to and so forth. So the fawning corporate media is supposed to be the fourth estate. You know, people know that expression, but not many know where it comes from. It comes from Edmund Burke, the British statesman from the late 19th century. And what he said, looking in Parliament, the English Parliament there, at that time there were two houses of Commons and one of Lords. And so he said, I represent one of the three estates, but far more important is the fourth estate. And the fourth estate are the gentlemen from the press that you see up here in the galleries. You see them there? They keep us honest. Without the fourth estate, we would be left to our own devices. Now,
yeah, and they knew that, and the bad guys know that, too.
That's exactly right. And Thomas Jefferson said exactly the same thing. Without a free press, liberty is gone. And so what we have now is a fourth estate that is defunct. Now, the good news, Ernest, is that we now have a fledgling fifth estate. Let me explain. The ether, the World Wide Web, and specifically WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks is an incredibly new phenomenon. There's some magic way that people who want to leak videos that show a brutal treatment of civilians in Iraq and that kind of thing, they can get it to WikiLeaks, and WikiLeaks will put it into the ether. Now, what's happened, and this is very dangerous, I talked to Dan Ellsberg about this just yesterday, what's happened is the U.S. is going after this fellow, what's his name now, Julian...
Assange.
Yeah, he's an Australian. They're going after him. They're going to try to find him. And, you know, there are no rules anymore. The Supreme Court yesterday said, well, you know, you can kidnap people. Nobody's going to take offense.
You can kill them.
Yeah, well, you can kill them. Even American citizens you can kill.
Dead.
So the die is cast, Ernest. You know, if they catch Assange and, you know, subject him to enhanced interrogation techniques and make him finger all his accomplices, so to speak, in Stockholm and Berlin and Iceland and places like that, they will serve notice on anybody else who wants to leak or wants to expose leaked information, whether it's cables from Ambassador Eikenberry in Kabul, or whether it's damaging photo coverage of atrocities in Iraq or Afghanistan. People have to think twice. So the die is cast. If the fifth estate, which is something that we, at least I dearly hope, will take effect, if it's to survive, we have to pray for Julian Assange to escape the tender mercies of the special forces, the CIA, the drones, and of course the death squads that Cheney invented and that are still operating in places like Iraq.
Well, we have to assume that it's going to be highly unlikely that he will escape. I mean, you know, I'm thinking, man, they definitely want to make an example out of him. And a lot of times, it's like in the movie Gladiator. You know, no, they're not going to just kill you. They got to defame you. You know, they'll find out that he cheats at cards or something. And this is to have the Pentagon come out and say, oh, we're looking for, yeah, we just want to talk. We are seeking his cooperation.
Right.
Now how we get his cooperation, that's up to us, okay? This is what WikiLeaks came out of. Well, it's a lot of people that wanted to expose the kind of abuses of government, you know, including people from China, you know, Tiananmen Square kind of stuff. So I'm going, okay, I can see the motivation here. Well, of course, you know, they started putting the servers in at Sweden, I think, right?
One of the places, I just know what I see in the press on this.
You know, and the Sweden says, "Yeah, you're bringing on over here. You go on right ahead, and we're not going to be serving you or getting any extradition." And they can bite, but mm-hmm. that doesn't mean they won't come flying in with their little drones. Now, mm-hmm. the other thing is that you said Dan Ellsberg. Tell people who Dan is, and you know he has some intimate knowledge of how these guys work.
Yeah, Dan Ellsberg was a very high level official in the Pentagon during the Vietnam War days, and. He watched how the war was being planned and conducted. He was a former Marine. He was a company commander in the Marines. And so he knew what war was like. He went over to Vietnam and found out what was really happening. He found out that the military brass over there were lying through their teeth. So he came back, and he was working with RAND. RAND is a big outfit funded by the Air Force. And McNamara, the Secretary of Defense at the time, commissioned a study of how the heck we got into this mess in Vietnam. It was an incredible study. It went back through classified documents way back into the 50s. When Dan read that, he said, the American people need to know this. And so he took them out little by little. There were something like 30 volumes in his knapsack from RAND out there in Santa Monica. I reproduced them on a Xerox machine that he had put in his basement and gave them to the New York Times and the Washington Post. Now, guess what? The New York Times and the Washington Post were independent newspapers in those days. And despite the fear that the Nixon administration would retaliate, they went ahead and published them. It was incredible.
And it became known as what?
As the Pentagon Papers.
The Pentagon Papers. This has mm-hmm. been happening throughout history all the time. We've had Daniel on the show, and I tell you know, he understands exactly what's going on here. We have the State Department. You know, I want to ask this. Oh, dang it. Man, we're always going to have breaks. But I tell you what, when we come back, I want to talk about the role of the State Department in this, and now they're asking for, they want their own combat force in Iraq for the State Department. I'm going, wow.
Hello?
Wow. We'll get back with Ray McGovern on that issue when we come back in just a little bit here on Declare Your Independence.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
The world on my shoulder. As I'm getting older, your people get colder. Most of us only care about money making. Selfishness got us following the wrong direction. Wrong information always shown by the media. Negative images is the main criteria. Infecting the young minds faster than bacteria. Kids wanna act like what they see in the cinema. Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity. Lack of understanding leading us away from unity. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling under. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling down. It's no wonder why sometimes I'm feeling under. Gotta keep my faith alive, love is found. Now ask yourself,
where is the love? Where is the love?
Oh, it's right here on Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, and my friend Ray McGovern. Oh, what higher demonstration of love can you have than to go face-to-face, head-to-head with the big bad guys that you know to be big bad guys. And I want to thank Ray McGovern for doing that very thing for the years when it was definitely unpopular. In fact, it's so unpopular that you would think that, you know, winning a presidential election, promising to I will bring back the troops, we'll have a schedule, we'll do it on, you know, whatever, blah 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 blah, promises. Then they keep Gates, you know, the Secretary of Defense, they promote and Clapper, one of the guys that was part of this problem, and they got, you know, it's the same, they expand the wars, they expand it. What happened to the anti-war movement, Ray?
Well, part of it was sort of castrated or neutered by the very victory for which they fought so hard. There were warnings even while Obama was running instincts were to compromise at the drop of a hat, that he would not follow through on whatever principles he had. Now, I'm afraid that he's shown himself, well, let's say, an invertebrate. And this has significant repercussions, not only in this country, but, you know, put yourself in the position of Prime Minister Netanyahu from Israel. Now, Obama says there must be no more illegal settlements in the West Bank. And Netanyahu thumbs his nose at it and tells his housing minister to announce, yeah, there's going to be 1,200 more we'll put in next week. I mean, they don't take the guy seriously. And the real danger of that, Ernest, is that even though Obama may say privately, Benjamin Netanyahu, please don't start a war with Iran. It really wouldn't be a good idea. And, you know, Admiral Mullen, my Joint Chiefs of Staff, says he keeps saying that would be, he always says very three times, very, very, very bad idea. So please don't do that. Now, I'm Netanyahu, okay, and I see a wuss in the White House. And I can start a war, and I look at the situation in politically in the United States, and I say, if I fly my planes, if I fly my bomber and my fighter bombers over Iraq, you think that Obama's going to shoot them down? Give me a break. He's going to wave them through, and the Congress is going to support him like 400-3, like they usually support any resolution in favor of Israel. So Obama has let himself be backed into a corner. He looks like a wuss. And when he looks like a wuss to a very dangerous character, an unpredictable character like Netanyahu, look what he did in the Eastern Mediterranean, you are in trouble, and you are liable to be surprised by a minor country that's not even an ally, by the way, mousetrapping you into a response that would bring on a very, very large war, which, incidentally, we would not win.
Yeah, I mean, win what anyway?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, Iran is, how many people are in Iran? It's what, 80 million or something?
They're about 65 million. Yeah.
That, you know, that's like a lot, you know, yeah. And we would, they're not even Arabic, they're Persian. You know, we keep trying to put a towel on their head, and we're going, look, you're not even talking about the same ethnicity. They're totally different, and the way they're trying to paint this, they're much more westernized during all the time that the Shah was there. They were, and when we had 9/11, they were very supportive of us, you know, hundreds of thousands of people in the street, you know, we love USA, or at least feel bad, you know, that the towers went down, and we squandered all of this, and we keep trying to put everybody in some kind, in this into a religious context, and is it the Christian faith being used, making it kind of a Israel support? You're not going to go to heaven unless you support Israel and make it a crusade again. Is that a large part of this? Is it a weapon, a tool? Does it not really matter? It's just frosting. I mean, what role does that play in these kind of issues?
Well, you know, Ernest, you raise a really good question here. You know, the attitude toward Israel is very complex. Americans of my vintage, and I'm 70 now, remember World War II, and remember how boatloads of Jewish immigrants trying to get to the United States were turned back to certain death in the concentration camps of Europe. And this is 1940, 1941, okay? So the Israelis, those who remember that, you know, have a legitimate fear that they have to be on their own. Besides that, you know, we didn't really help them very much when the Holocaust was first made known. We tried to pretend it wasn't there. And so what's the result here? The result here is that a lot of Americans have kind of a guilt complex, which is really exacerbated by what many Christians are taught in school, which is, well, you know, God sort of promised that land to Israel. I mean, it's the promised land. And so, you know, it doesn't matter what they do. You know, it doesn't matter about the 750,000 Palestinians. So there's these three things that are back in the core of many Christian Americans. And what happens is they have this guilt complex, which sort of promotes the forgiveness of any sins committed by Israel. And, you know, what we need to do is put that Christian guilt somewhere else, because it's doing no favors to the state of Israel, it's doing no favors to the Israeli people, and it's still doing no favors to our own government, because to the degree we are identified with Israel, and we have fatheads like Joe Biden saying there's no air, there's no distance between Israel and the United States, to the degree we are identified with the savage policies that they conduct in Gaza, in the West Bank, and the embargo they have on humanitarian aid to Gaza, to the degree the United States is identified with that, well, you can expect the recruiting lines for al-Qaeda, for the Taliban, for every kind of Muslim extremist to be that much longer and that much more vehement.
Okay, so,
it's self-defeating.
Let me make this observation and see what your comment is. It seems to me that it's like the forces that be, whoever the heck they are, there's they, them, those. I mean, there are those that just want to be left alone and those that just won't leave them alone. I mean, it's pretty simple as far as I'm concerned. Who is aggressing against whom? And it seems to me that it's like they want conflict. These wars are not meant to be won. They're meant to be fought. They just want conflict. And if the United States pulled and just got out of Israel's way, the foreign policy, they'd stop stealing my money and redistributing it and foreign aid to any country, including Israel, that, you know, they'd work it out themselves. I would think. I mean, they're acting like the bully that has the bigger bully behind them to back them up, you know? And if you take that away, would there be resolution? Or would one of the countries cease to exist? Would all of a sudden the Arab countries get vaporized in a nuclear cloud from Israel? Or would Israel go into the ocean? I mean, what would happen if we just walked away?
Well, it would have to be done in a statesmanlike way, but that is the answer. We have to think twice about giving $3 billion, I repeat, $3 billion worth of aid to Israel every year. This enables them to do the kinds of things that they're doing. Plus, as you say, they look
like
over
buying congressmen.
Yeah. So, and a lot of that money comes back to congresspeople. But to the degree that Americans need to become aware of this, they won't learn it from the fawning corporate media. That's why I like shows like yours and others that put into the ether the real situation. The real situation is very, very, what the Germans call labile, sort of precarious for the Israelis themselves, because they can't go on. They can't go on retaliating, making enemies like the Turks. Now, you don't mess around with the Turks, okay? Well, technically speaking, by attacking a Turkish vessel, they are in what is called in legal circles a condition of war with Turkey. Why? Because that's Turkish territory. Now, Turkey happens to be an ally of ours. What do you mean an ally? There's a mutual defense agreement which says the United States and all the other NATO members are pledged to assist Turkey in the event it's attacked, okay? Now, how about Israel? Ooh, do we have a conflict there? Because Israel's our ally, right? Wrong, okay? Listeners, listen, okay? Israel is not our ally. There is no defense treaty with Israel between the United States and Israel. Now, that doesn't mean we haven't offered them a defense treaty. We did. In the mid-70s, after the second Arab-Israeli war, we said, hey, maybe if we offered the Israelis the assurance of a military alliance, maybe they would stop doing the kinds of things they're doing, and maybe the Arabs wouldn't feel tempted to do those things. And so what happened was, Israel said thanks, but no thanks, because treaties mean clearly defined, internationally recognized borders. Hey, we don't want any part of that.
No, because they want to define them. We got the deed right here. It's called the Talmud and Torah, and we're going to go get it, which they have. And man, it just keeps getting worse ever since. And when we come back, I still want to go back to Afghanistan. I mean, but this all is so intertwined. And I just can we just leave? I mean, am I allowed not to care? Can I not allow you to take my money to do all this is being done in my name? I'd say no. Am I allowed to? I don't know. They don't think so. We'll talk about more when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with Ray McGovern and Ernest Hancock.